The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Hello and welcome to the KM Football Podcast with me, Steve Turvitt. It's a week of firsts and lasts, so let me explain. I'm hosting the show on my own for the first time today, but also standing in the studio for the last time before leaving the KM and moving abroad. It's been an enormous pleasure and great fun to be part of this podcast. I've learned so much from our guests, hearing some brilliant stories from the world of football and getting some strong opinions on really important topics. But enough of me and on with the show. There can't be many people I've seen play more than today's guest. He spent years in the youth system at Gillingham, but when it came to forging a career in men's football, he had to look at options away from Priestfield. He certainly made that transition during a season at Dover, where he ended up in the playoff final. But it was Stonebridge Road where he really made a name for himself during a six-year rollercoaster ride. No one else has played more games for Ebbsfleet United since the club changed its name in 2007, but after 240 appearances, he moved on this summer to take over the captaincy at Aldershot Town. It's been a pleasure to cover his career to this point, so I'm delighted to welcome Dean Rance to the studio. Dean, thanks for coming in. How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you.
As I said, now an Aldershot player. How have you found the start to the season in a different shirt?
Very different. It's been a change with complete new manager, players, so an environment, to be honest. We're quite a young team, so we're learning, we're going to get better. But we've had a reasonably solid start, and I think if you look at the games we've played, it's been very fine margins, and we've played, I think, three out of the top four, and if I'm honest, I think we've probably been the better team, and it's only come down to probably in that final third and taking our chances rather than conceding probably sloppy goals, if I'm honest, that we're not a lot higher up the table. But we've come away from a good result on Saturday, and we can kick on from that.
On Saturday, you were back at Ebbsfleet in the away changing room and playing against your old club. How was that?
Well, I actually got lost on the way to the away changing room. I didn't actually know where it was. So I've gone in, I've seen a Hendo in the home. I was like, where actually is this away changing room? And he sent me the other way, so it's over on the other side of the stadium. But I enjoyed going back. It was good to see old faces, and it's good to see that they've transitioned from last season. And that's all behind them now.
From your perspective in central midfield, how did you find the game?
I thought we played well on the day, Aldershot. I don't think they probably hit the levels that they expect and probably they have been all season. But I think that comes down from the way we performed. I think we nullified a lot of what they're good at. They get the ball forward quickly. They've got the two boys up top that are quick and strong, along with most of their team. A lot of their team are over 6 foot, and they do rely on set plays and getting to the front man early and getting around that, and we stood up to that, and we got the ball down and we played our football, and other than the last 15 minutes I'd say we were the team that were on top for the large amount of that game.
After 6 years at Ebbsfleet, it was a kind of an end of an era for you in the summer when you had to move on and look for a new club. What was that process like, and why did you end up choosing the Shots?
Yeah, it was strange, to be fair. It's the first time in 5 or 6 years that I've had to find a new club. It probably come at the right time, I'd say. It probably was getting a little bit stale down at Ebbsfleet, and I did want a new challenge. I was limited in where I could go, if I'm honest. I've been doing a uni course I'm going into my fifth year, so it's my last year. So that was one of my main focuses this year, to get that finished. And to do that, I needed a day off a week to go there, and it's in Chelmsford. So I spoke to near on every club in this league, and they all said, yeah, but we cannot give you the day off to go to university. So it came down to me. I was contemplating going part-time for a year just to make sure once the course is done. I didn't want to waste the 4 years I've done before. Some people said I had a chance to go into the league with a couple of clubs, and people said that you could take a year out and go back to it. But then I just kind of thought, if I do go into the league or any of these other clubs, take the year out of uni, do well there, and then next year I'm in the same boat as I'm going to have to go back and then leave it anyway. So, yeah, I was going to go part-time. And then I got the phone call from Aldershot, and they basically said they could give me some leeway with my university. It's not a day off every week, but it's some leeway with it. And the way he spoke about it was that he was happy with me to go down that avenue. So I went and met them, had the conversation, and it appealed to me, not just the fact that I could go to university, but the whole club as a whole is a big club. They obviously had a poor year last year, but they've been given a second chance, and this is the year that hopefully we can take that chance and be successful and be where they probably should be, and that's probably the top half of this league and into League Two. And from there on, they've obviously got the new lease for the new stadium. So from there, they can go wherever they want, I think.
What did it mean to go into a new club and be given the armband?
Yeah, it was a very proud moment for me, to be honest. I went in and we had the first pre-season game, and the manager pulled me and he kind of said to me, would you be interested in being the captain? And straight away I said, yeah, I'd be interested in it. And as the pre-season went on, I never really thought about it again. There was Robbie Tinkler down there, who was being the captain at the time, and I just kind of just got on with my game, done what I'd done normally, done nothing different. And we're quite a young team, and like I say, that's been a learning experience for me. I've always been in teams that are experienced. I'm normally the youngest player in the team for the last 4 years, and this year I'm one of the oldest, if not the oldest. Me and Mitch are the oldest. So I've been called a dinosaur down there at 27.
So the Rontosaurus.
Exactly. So as it was gone on, I've enjoyed enjoyed being captain. Yeah, it's something that I've always felt like is in my game. I've been pretty much a leader for the last 4 years at Ebbsfleet. So I've had stages there where I've been the captain. So I know what it takes. But in the day, I just feel like you just lead on the pitch and make sure your change room's in order, and if people have got some problems and they want to come to you, then I think that's a good sign, and just look after the ones that are in the changing room.
I mean, clearly the manager over there has looked at you as someone that he can trust to be that leader. Do you feel that you've matured a lot in recent years?
Yeah. You only have to look at my first year in non-league football. I think I got 18 yellow cards and 2 red cards. So that was my first year of football, and from now on, I think I've had a handful of red cards in the last 4 years and not many yellow cards. So I think, as a player, I think you do naturally. You get experience, you become more knowledgeable of the game, you pick and choose your tackles, and a lot of it when you're young, it's you're just eager to impress, and you feel like you can win every ball. But as you get older, you kind of pick and choose when you can do it, and you manage your game a lot better. But yeah, I've developed, I think, character-wise in the last, especially 3-4 years at Ebbsfleet. And that's probably been in the change rooms I've been in. They've helped me to develop, grow up, I'd say. Grow up quickly. Because if you don't grow up in the change rooms I've been in, you do fall by the wayside. And if you're not a man and you haven't got something about you, then you would struggle, I would say.
Explain for those of us who will never be a professional or even a semi-professional footballer what you mean when you talk about that changing room environment, you know, and it's real, you know, it's men's stuff, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I would say very demanding. That was one thing I noticed when I come into, especially a men's changing room, non-league, it was very demanding. I was always around big characters. When I first went in at Dover, you had Daryl McMahon, Ian Simhemba, Shane Huke, Michael Corcoran, Billy Bricknell. They're all very big characters. And then I went into Ebbsfleet and you had your Kedswells, your Jukeboxes, Dave Winfield, and all of them. There was one thing that I always noticed with them, that every single day they demanded that you gave your all for the team, and if you didn't, you were told, and it wasn't sugar coated. It wasn't you can do better. No matter what age you were, whether you were 22 or you're 30 years of age, you were treated exactly the same. And that's one thing I've tried and bring into me being the captain now, is that it doesn't matter what age you are, you have to grow up fast, and we're all in it together. And if something needs to be said, then you say it. And when you're on a pitch, you can't sugarcoat it, and you just have to be done quickly. You have to get your point across quick. And when you're in a change room, you're all in it. At the end of the day, you're all in it together. You all want the same thing. And I think my days at Ebbsfleet, we all wanted the same thing, and we all demanded every single day from each other. And that's one thing that I would say, that a lot of people from the outside used to look in at us with all the money. I used to hear all the time the mention, oh, they've got all the money, all this, blah, blah, blah. They just turn up for the money. But then you had players that come in, a lot of people that come in on trial or on loan or just signed in. And they used to, the first thing they used to say was like, it's completely different to what I thought it would be. They're like, how hard you actually work every day. They don't realise how hard we actually work. So even when we was in the Conference South, things were done professionally every single day. There were no days off ever. Training was intense every single day. And you see how well we did. And although we didn't get promoted the first 2 or 3 years, we was always at the top. And I can't remember how many games we actually lost, but it wasn't many. And that was due to just pure hard work every single day. And there was no big time mentalities in there at all. No one was ever above their level, above their station. And yeah, that's one thing I would definitely say, that it was hard work for the years I was there. A lot of hard work.
When it came to your disciplinary record and having to grow up and improve that side of your game, was that a case of a manager getting hold of you or those senior players that were around you?
I'd say the turning point would probably be my first year at Ipswich, when we got to the playoff final against Dover and I was suspended. I got sent off against Bromley in the second leg in the playoff semi-final, and we were about 4-1, and it was 10 minutes to go, and the game was done. We was already in the final. Everything was done. We was all basically just turning down the minutes until we knew it was in the final. And then there was a 50-50, me and I think it was Goldberg, it was the manager's son at the time. And I wouldn't say it was a bad tackle, it was just balls in front of you, the players in front of you. Because the studs are showing, you win the ball. And I remember him just rolling, and I'm thinking, that doesn't look good. So I've got up thinking, yellow, it's 10 minutes to go, they've made a massive meal out of it, and the ref's come over and he's given me a red card. At the time, I didn't realise the importance of that red card, I don't think. I've come off the pitch and I was absolutely devastated in the change room. And I remember Brownie coming in and he was good as gold. He was just like, I think these things happen, blah, blah, blah. And I remember a couple of days later, he just pulled me and he just kind of said, like, you're missing the playoff final, the Kent Cup final and the first game of next season. And for how good your season's been, you're missing probably the most important games at the end of the career, all because of something you didn't probably need to do. And I remember that sticking with me and thinking, and I watched that game, we had Dover, obviously it was my team that I played with the year before, watching it and feeling a little bit guilty, and that I'd let, especially when we had lost, that I'd let Brownie down a little bit, the fact that I feel like I probably could have made a difference that day, and who knows, in hindsight you never know, that day we might have won, we might have still lost, but I feel like I could have made a difference that day, and it would have been maybe a different outcome. But I remember just feeling an overriding guilt, thinking, and I was watching it and just thinking, looking at Brownie when I knew that we weren't going up, and it's his job at the end of the day. And from then on, I'd probably say that was, looking back at it now, I didn't realise at the time that was the turning point, and where I thought, you've got to be a bit more sensible here. You can't just go around flying into tackles left, right and centre. Although I'd say that that's probably my strongest part of my game, I definitely, from then on, that was the turning point.
Because we're talking about a split second, as you say, when that ball drops in between you and the opposition player, and it's your decision-making at that point that's determining whether, A, you either win the ball or not, but also whether you might get yourself booked or sent off.
I would say, in all my career, I've never, ever done a dirty tackle. I've never gone to hurt anyone. I've never done a bad tackle, believe it or not. Some people will be listening to this going, there's no chance. But honestly, I don't think you can ever pull a tackle and go, yeah, that's naughty, ever. It literally is just decision making. If I think the ball's there to be won and I think I can win it, then I'm going to go win it. And you look back at it now, and I look at the Bromley game and I think, should I have gone in for that tackle? I think it's just a natural reaction. The ball's there to be won. What do I do? Not go in for it? And then, so yeah. Yeah, I'd definitely say that was the turning point, and probably it didn't need to be done. We were 4-1 up. There's 10 minutes to go. That was a hard suspension to take, because I mentioned, obviously, we missed the Kent Cup final, the playoff final, and then the first game the next season. So we had the whole of the summer to think about the playoff final we had lost, done all the pre-season, which I don't think I did because I was injured, and then missed the first game of the next season.
But we have seen that disciplinary record improve a lot. The number of yellow cards and red cards, you have kept that aggression in your game, but it seems to be more of a controlled aggression.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, you do grow up and you become more experienced. You kind of know which tackles to pick and choose from. You can't just, like I say, you can't just go in for every tackle, because sometimes you can't win it. And nowadays, especially nowadays, it's so easy to pick up a yellow card. Like, you see it every week. Sometimes I'm picking up yellow cards and thinking, that has never been a yellow card. Sometimes the first tackle, it's not even a bad one, it's straight away a yellow card. So, and you're walking the tightrope from the first minute. And it's so easy to pick up second. And you see red cards, you're looking at the fixtures every week now, and there's near on every game is a red card. So, yeah, you now have to be a lot more... And the game's a lot different, I'd say, even from 5 years ago. Even 5 years ago, the game's a lot different. And that comes from... You look at your VARs now and you look at the Prem, and everything's just magnified massively. Everything's like any tackle, anything that happens on the pitch. And it all stems down into our leagues, and refs now think they look at what they're doing in the Prem and think, oh, that needs to be done in our league. So, yeah... Yeah, with experience, you will pick up less cards, I think, and I've grown up a bit.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
As a young boy, when you were going through the age groups at Gillingham, did you have that same sort of fire in your belly? Have you always been the type of player that we know now?
Yeah, I've had it. I was probably worse. I was probably a lot worse when I was younger. I had it since playing football with my older brother. I've always played when I was younger. Even when I was at Jill's, I was playing year or two above myself, because I didn't have an age group for me at the time. So I was just playing 1 or 2 years above myself. And I had to have that aggression because I was smaller than everyone. I had to have that aggression naturally just to compete with these players, because they were a lot bigger than me. And like I say, it is one of my strongest parts of my game. So I never wanted it. And I used to have Brian Ball, Mark Patterson. I had an old manager called Steve. And they all said they never wanted to take it out of my game. So, although at times, especially when I was younger, it did probably go overboard. They always used to speak to my dad and say he needs to calm down. But at the same time, we don't want to take that out of him, because it is such a strong part of his game.
You were very young when you got into the School of Excellence at Gillingham at Priestfield. Was football always something that you were pushing for, that, you know, this is my focus, I'm going to be a professional player?
From as long as I can remember kicking a football, like most kids. I remember I used to watch my older brother, he was at Jules, and he was doing really well, and he obviously picked up an injury which made his career cut short. But I used to go watch him train, and I was just kicking a ball around just on the side of the 3G they used to train down at Rochester. I think it was Darren Hare, if I remember correctly. I think it was Darren here. Went and spoke to my dad and just said, "Is he playing for anyone?" He says, "Just playing with his mates at the moment." And I was so young. I was about five. There was no age group for me. He said, "Does he fancy training down here for a little bit?" So I remember just training for their six or sevens, just till I was old enough to have an age group. And I loved it. And to be honest, I rarely remember having a, when I was a kid playing Sunday league with my mates. I remember I had about maybe a year, but my memories as a kid growing up were purely just playing for Jules.
When did you really start to take it seriously, or think that maybe I am going to be good enough to make it?
Where I actually thought that I was going to be good enough, under 12s, 13s, you realise that you're probably one of the stronger ones in the group. But then at the same time, I used to have a lot of pressure. I used to feel so much pressure to make it. Obviously, I've been there for so long, and the closer it got, I remember... I can't remember if I played, and I didn't play very well. And obviously you get in the car, you sit there quietly, waiting for your dad's reaction, and he obviously gives you the honest answer, you've not been that great, blah, blah, blah. I remember getting home and just not feeling like I don't enjoy this anymore. And I think I was about 12, and I got home, and I just said to my dad, I don't enjoy it, I don't want to do this anymore. My dad said, okay, if that's what you want to do, ring up the manager. He said, I'm not going to do it. You ring up the manager and you tell him that you don't want to do this anymore. So I said, okay. So it was Brian Ball at the time. I rang Brian Ball and I said to him, I'm just not enjoying this. I find it too. There's too much pressure. Like, I just want to go play with my mates and just enjoy football again. And he kind of said, I don't know if that's the best idea. Maybe you should have a couple of days to think about it and come back in and enjoy it again. So I had a couple of days, he rang me back and he said, do you want to do it? And I'm quite strong-minded, the fact that once I make a decision, do I really change it, whether that's right or wrong, I'm not too sure. But he rang me, I said, no, I made my decision, I don't want to come back. And then I think I didn't play for him for about a month, maybe a month and a bit. And he rang me again, and then he come and met me, and he said, "I honestly think you're wasting a talent you've got. I really think you should think about maybe coming back, whether it's once a week, do what you got to do." And I said, "Okay, I'll give it a go." And that was the only time where, well, I tell you, that's the only time. There's a couple of times other than since then that I fell out of love with football, but found it tough. And yeah, I went back and I never looked back, and I did start enjoying it until probably I got to that pro level, when I first couple of years as a pro.
I was going to say, how did you find the transition from age group football into the senior setup?
Tough. Not ability wise, I'd say mentally wise. Like, I come across, I am now quite confident, but as a kid, from the transition from youth team, and I got a pro quite early on, and it was under Mark Stimps. I was speaking to Mitch in the car on the way up to football about it, and I was with Stimmo, and he had three or four of us. We were quite young, and we all done things together, and he loved us. He had our arm around us. He would make us feel confident, like we believed in ourselves, and it helped a lot in training. And I remember the transition from, I got my first year pro, and my first game was against Bromley, and eager to impress, balls, keepers come out of the ball. I've gone to shoot, but the keeper's got there first, and I've kicked the bottom of his foot, and I ended up shattering two metatarsals, broken another one, like completely broke my foot. I was out for ages. That was my first year. I remember the majority of that season I was injured, to the point where, before I had my operation, the doctor basically said, "I'm not sure if you're going to be able to play again."
So you're how old now?
That was my first year pro, so I'm saying 18 maybe. And obviously that's tough to take for any 18-year-old, knowing that you might not be able to play again. So I was out for, I think, about 10 months, could even be more. And I come back, and the group that I'd been with had kind of progressed, and I obviously had stood still. So they're now not part first team, but they've established themselves a little bit. They've made appearances. And it was at this time that Stimmo got the sack, I think. So Stimmo's now been sacked. So I think Hessenthaler come in. And then the next year, I've come back, and I've had a couple of other injuries. I've rolled my ankle a few times, and all these injuries, at the time I'm thinking, oh, my time will come, I'll be fine. But I'm forgetting that you got your Jack Paynes, Luke Rooney's, Connor Essens, Callum Davis, Bradley Dack. All of these are progressing. They're all going on with their careers and establishing themselves and making an appearance in the first team. And then I finally got back in, and I've started to feel a bit fit. I've gone out on loan. I think I went to Bishop Stortford, done reasonably well, come back. But I used to dread training with the first team. I used to hate it.
Why?
And that's what I don't understand. I used to put them all on a pedestal. So I look back at it now, and it's stupid, because I used to play with, like, I've played with Stuart Lewis, and at the time Stuart Lewis was there, you've got Simeon Jackson's, Curtis Weston's. And I don't know why, but I used to just work myself up. I remember the night before, I knew I was training with the first team, I just dread it. I used to absolutely dread it.
Did you worry that you weren't good enough?
Yeah, maybe the confidence that I thought I had kind of probably drained out of me for those years. And I just remember going into training, and I'd train with the first team, and we'd do like a little thing on a Friday, and it would just be like in and out of cones and chip the ball back to the next player. But where I'd worked myself up so much, and I was so nervous, that a simple task like that, I was useless. And I was just thinking, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I'm struggling massively. And then the players that I played with all these years were fine. And that's why I always say, like, Luke Rooney always sticks out for me in the mind. Very, very good player, but he was so confident that it made him even better. So he would go into the training and genuinely believe he was the best player by a country mile, whether he was or not. It didn't matter to him. Like, if someone told him, "You were rubbish today," he would not care. It was like a water off a duck's back. He would just go, "Yep, yeah, or whatever," and then just go and take, get the ball, try and take on another five players, and they'll be like, "No, take one player on it." He would just keep doing the same thing. And where he had that such good confidence in himself, I think that helped him massively. And I kind of lost that. I lost that confidence looking back at it now over those few years, and that limited me to progressing. And I do think if Stimmo was there for longer and I made that first team appearance, where I hadn't made that first team appearance, I always felt like I wasn't part of the first team. And the thing is, that what I don't understand is the actual team there at that time were brilliant. All the lads were brilliant with me. They were good as gold. And yeah, I think if I made that appearance earlier on, it could have been a could have maybe pushed on. I might be well out of it. I might have not at all. I might not be my level. But I do feel like I didn't give myself justice. And I do remember there was one game against Accrington away, and I'd already been on loan. And I was, the first time I was actually properly fit. We were 3-0 down or something, and we went down to 10 men, and a midfielder got injured. And I was thinking, I'm the only midfielder. And that time I was just starting to think, maybe I am ready. I remember looking, thinking, right, I'm going to come on here. So I'm warming up and down. And there was another young lad, he was like 2 years below me, but it was a striker, Ashley Miller. And he's brought him on in front of me, and he put like a centre of half into centre mid. And I remember sitting back down on that bench there, and I thought, I'm never going to play. I'm never going to get an appearance here. So that was the time where I thought, yeah, I need to think about moving on and pushing my career on further on. That's obviously when I signed for Dover. And where I've loved my time at Dover and Ebbsfleet so much, maybe where I've loved it so much is kind of reluctantly maybe not want to go back into the pro, if you kind of understand. I've had chances to do it, maybe not been the right opportunities sometimes, but whereas some people would snap their hand off, I've kind of reluctantly been like, I'm not too sure, like, because I probably don't want to go back to where I wasn't enjoying it as much, where I've loved my 4 or 5 years where I played so far.
How did you get over that mental block of worrying so much about training, or was it easy because you left Jules and you were in a completely different environment?
That was it. So I don't feel I ever stopped getting nervous playing for the first team when I was like pro at Jules, and it weren't until I went to Bishop Stortford and Dover, and I realised probably where you play games and you become part of a squad, part of a team, and you probably get respect from your peers, and that's when you can kind of shine and you can kind of show your ability. Whereas if you're not part of a squad and you're just in and out and you're just in training, it is tough. And I remember Bishop Stortford, I'd done really well, and that was probably one loan move that I got my confidence back. And then I went there for a second spell, and there was in the Conference North. Oh, that was tough. I was going up to Corby Town on a Tuesday night and that was my first experience of non-league football. I remember being on the coach, and Ian Walker was our manager. Remember the old England goalie? So he was our manager. We're on the way to Corby Town on a Tuesday, and I'm thinking, right, we'll have a pre-match. And everything I took for granted, Jill was thinking, oh yeah, we'll have a pre-match. So they've come down with a Tesco's bag and given me a ham sandwich from Tesco's. So I remember sitting there on the coach thinking, I don't think this is for me. I don't know if I want to do this. And then we ended up getting beat 5-0 at Corby Town away. That was the second spell, and then that only lasted a month. And then obviously I went to Dover.
What was Ian Walker like?
I'm not sure if management was for him at that time. I don't know. I don't know what he's done since. I wasn't there for the beginning of the season, so I come during the season. So I don't know if he had recruited them players or he had just been stuck with them. But I think where he'd been in such a, obviously he's played at the highest level, so he's everything's done for you. He knows, and he was probably trying to do that with a team of, especially at that time when I was there. There was a load of players there that they weren't interested in getting any further. They were happy where they were. They were happy picking up their money. They were part-time footballers, and they were content with that. And he was trying to get him in earlier. So on a match day, I remember he would get him in at like 9 o'clock, and we'd do a session before the game. So he would go through shape and that, and I was fine with it. So I was at Jill's at the time, so I was thinking, yeah, this is normal. I remember more experienced players there were just moaning. They were like, oh God, we've got in early, we've got to do shape, we've got a game at 3, I can't be bothered with this. I remember literally just for the whole session moaning, and then we'd do the session, and then we'd have pre-match. But obviously the club's got no money, so the pre-match was beans on toast. So we got there at 9 o'clock, done a session, had beans on toast. By the time the game got round, everyone was just like, this is another 90 minutes of football now. It wasn't the best environment to play your football. And yeah, I think Ian Walker probably, he was used to, he probably would have done a lot better higher up the levels than going in down that low.
Your career really then got going as a senior footballer in 2012 when you went down to Dover. How did you find it down there?
I loved it. Obviously, I went on loan there the end of the season before, done reasonably well, and I went in and met Brownie and Nicky Forster, and I kind of knew that I just wanted to play football and enjoy it, and I enjoyed my time there. I had other clubs, but I knew that was where I actually enjoyed my football. So I loved it there, and we actually done reasonably well. I think we were we were in the playoffs, but at that time, obviously, I've come from being the first, second year pro at Jules, where results, I was not involved in them, so I wasn't sure how important results were. And then obviously coming into this environment, how important actually results were. It didn't matter how you played, it didn't matter what you did, you just won the game of football. I think Nicky Forster ended up getting the sack over Christmas. We were doing well, and then we just lost 5 on the bounce out of nowhere. Probably because we had players like Hughey, Bricknell, and players like that over Christmas period. They were probably enjoying themselves. I think we had a couple of injuries. Hughey got injured, he was a big miss for us, centre half. And we just lost 5 on the bounce, and then Kinnear come in. And I enjoyed my time with Kinnear. It was a lot different. So I've obviously gone from playing football to then Kinnear comes in, he's got a completely different style. I'll never forget the first first time he walked in, and Jake LaBelle. Do you remember Terry Dixon? So Terry, one of the best players I've ever played with that's not fit, and how he never ever made it. I don't. Obviously the injuries played a part, but they've come in one day and they're in the changing room and they're going around all the players. They've never met the players before, and they've just gone up to Tell and gone, so are you fit? He's looked around and he's just gone, nah. So that was him done. He was never playing again. So straight away, I remember it was snowing and Kinnear's got us in and we're running around the Crabble down at Dover on a Tuesday night training session, running around his poles. Brownie's sitting there. He's obviously there. He was with Nicky Forster, but he's just there, just seeing out his contract. And we just started winning. And I mean, the first actual training session, I've got the ball and I've switched it. And all of a sudden, Kinnear's like stopped the session, and they've gone, "You won't, like, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Just switching the ball." And he was like, no, we're not doing that anymore, and showing me the channel ball. Obviously I knew what a channel ball is, and I'd done the channel ball. He went, "Perfect, that's all you need to do." And what I realised they actually did, they just simplified the whole game. And whether people think it's right or wrong, I think they deserve massive credit for what they did for Dover, because if you look at what they actually did for Dover, they were in the playoffs for 3 years the season was in the National, and yeah, and obviously that season that they come in, we got into the playoffs with them, and we nearly went up, to be fair. So yeah, it was just a different style, and the reason I probably didn't stay towards the end of the season, I was still young, and I felt like I probably wouldn't develop as much as I wanted to with that style. But looking at it now, if I wanted to play at this age now with them, then yeah, happily.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
So, as a player, when you're in a team that's playing a very particular style, like Chris and Jake wanted to, and then you make the move to Ebbsfleet, and Steve Brown's got a totally different philosophy about how he sees the game, what's that like making that switch?
I wouldn't say it's too tough, because I'm a massive believer you have to play both sides of the game. There isn't a way to play football. You can't say, "Oh, we're total football" or "we're total long ball." I feel, in my opinion, that there's a place for a long ball and there's a place for keep the ball. It's just the way you have to mix and match. And I feel like I can do both, to be honest. I feel if I need to go long and put it in a good area, I can do that. But at the same time, I can keep the ball and play on a team that keeps the ball. And you saw that when we was with Daryl and Steve at Ebbsfleet, we played some really good stuff.
I think all the time that you were at Ebbsfleet, particularly in the Conference South, because of the takeover and talks about the budget, you were seen as the team to beat. Was that almost like an extra sort of a pressure you didn't really need?
No, we thrived on it. People always say this, did you feel the pressure? And I feel like every team should feel the pressure now, because if you're not, then what are you doing it for? Like, I feel like every game, yeah, the other team wanted to beat us, but that just made us more determined to beat them. And we knew every week we had to be on it, because if we weren't, the other team were desperate to get one over on us. And I feel like there's pressure in everything, not just football, in life in general. So I didn't see that as a burden at all. I saw that as, if anything, to push us on and drive us. And we had pressure since I stepped foot in Ebbsfleet. There probably wasn't so much pressure that first year. But as that year went on, the pressure definitely started to develop. And since I remember, there's always been pressure down at Ebbsfleet. And regardless, the money's gone into it. And I feel like we handled it pretty well, to be honest.
season by season, you obviously became more established down there. How much did you enjoy really becoming a part of that club?
Yeah, I absolutely love my time down at Ipswich. I'll always look back at it and with good memories. From day one till even the last day, I can only say good things about the club. The club was run like a league club, and that was credit to Peter Varney that was there originally. He ran it like, he obviously come from Charlton, he knew the standards, and I think a lot of clubs looking at it are probably a little bit jealous that, oh, why are they doing this, why are they doing that? And I'm thinking, well, why not? Just because we're in non-league, why can't we be run like a professional club? Why can't we do what professional clubs do? Because that's the standard. And if the money's there, then I feel like if they had it, then they would do it. So I think a lot of it was probably jealousy that they were looking in going, oh, they're doing this, doing that. But the bottom line is, regardless of all of that, we had to win games of football. So we'd have had all that, and if we weren't winning games of football, which you saw at times, then people weren't playing and people lost their jobs. So, I absolutely loved my time throughout that, absolutely.
Who did you most enjoy playing with and getting to know there? You had a whole series of big characters.
There's a lot, yeah, there's a lot. My favourite, probably most frustrating to play with, was Jutey. Just for the fact that he used to mess around during the games. So he was one of them that he enjoyed football, and I'm quite serious on the pitch. So we're playing, and he'd just be running around going, like, just half joking around on the pitch. And I was just half losing my head, like, Jukes, he'd be serious. And he'd be like, oh, what's the problem? We're 2-0 up. Like, just enjoy it. And I'm one of them. When I'm on the pitch, probably not a very fun person to play with, to be honest, but he's a complete opposite. He used to drive me insane. And then I've been quite lucky with who I played with midfield. Obviously, I played with Daryl, very good player. He was probably my biggest influence, I'd say, in non-league. One of the biggest influences in non-league. He improved me massively as a manager and as a player next to me. He used to give me advice all the time, and he helped me grow up, because he's not very easy to play with. He's demanding. He used to moan every single game for 90 minutes.
So he'd be in your ear out on the pitch?
He would moan for 90 minutes at me. But I've got thick skin, and it helped me. And I enjoyed it, to be fair, because I feel like if they're not really saying anything, they probably don't really care. And as a player, he was brilliant to play with, because the fact that you'd get the ball and you could just kind of find him in a hole anywhere, a lot like John Paul Kissick, he was the same. But then obviously he transferred into as a manager, Macca, and then although we were friends players-wise, as soon as he became a manager, people probably assumed that we were probably still friends. We were mates, but the relationship kind of come away from each other, I'd say.
Changed a bit.
Yeah, because he's now the manager, so, and I'm his player, so we are going to see disagreements. There's going to be times where he drops me, times where I don't agree with what he's saying, and I just feel for it to be a healthy relationship, we kind of just naturally, he become the manager and I become the player, and there just become that bit of respect, and nothing was ever personal. So if he made a decision, I remember a time he dropped me for a few games and I pulled him, and I was fuming, probably threw my toys out the pram a little bit, and was kind of said, like, well, if you don't play me, then just let me go. And he was like, okay, if you want to go, you can go. He probably made it a lot hard work for me to be able to leave. But and then obviously now he's not the manager. I speak to him. When he was a manager, I probably only ever speak to him in a team talk or if he wanted to speak to me about a game. I rarely spoke to him outside of training or a game. Now he's not the manager. And you know, not my manager. We speak a lot on the phone. We speak to each other. He gives me advice, and the relationship's now a lot closer. But then, if you ever play for him, then I think that just naturally becomes a different relationship. Other players that I played, I've been very lucky with my midfield partners. I would say near on all of them have helped. So John Paul Kissick, I don't know how he's not played longer for. This level or levels above. I thought it was unbelievable, especially the year that he played Daryl's first year. You got Jordan Parks, that was a good move. Stuart Lewis, we used to play the Diamond, so we had me, we have Stuart Lewis, Jordan Parks and John Paul Kissick, and I used to find the Diamond really hard to play. It's the only time where I felt like we'd sussed the Diamond. I think we went till Christmas time, we were like unbeaten until we played Maidstone. And it's all because we was all different. We all had different little attitudes to our game, and it just worked, to be honest. And
that must be a fantastic feeling when you're in a system and there's that quartet of you in midfield, and you think, yeah, this works.
Yeah, without any heart, like, it wasn't effort. So we're going into games, it wasn't thinking about where we were running, it just kind of all just worked around each other. So Parks used to get in the box, Kissy used to be the ball player, like the total ball player. So anyone got the ball would just find Kissy in a pocket. Kissy probably didn't have the legs, where Stuart Lewis had the legs to get around everywhere. You used to see him, he'd be everywhere. And then I was the sitter and protect the back four, get the ball and just find any, they were always an option. And then when we didn't have the ball, we worked just as hard just to get in and be hard to break down. So yeah, that was probably the best as a combination midfield we had, and that was probably the best football we played at Ebbsfleet, I'd say. That it was a period of 6-7 months where I thought, we're decent, to be fair.
Yeah, started that season like a train, and probably most people thought you're going to go on and win the league because you're playing the best football.
Yeah, and then people thought that after Christmas we had won, but the truth is we didn't really have one. We hadn't lost up until Christmas. And I think from Christmas, we didn't actually lose that many games. We drew a few, but it was just because it was Sutton or Maidenhead. I don't know which ones it was.
Sutton that season.
Sutton. They just didn't lose after Christmas. I think they won near on every single game. So it weren't we had one. It was just they were so good that year. They're just relentless. Same as Maidenhead the year after. We was looking at the result thinking, like, they've got to lose eventually. And they just never lost. Like, we'd draw a few games and all of a sudden people were going, they're having one. And we're like, we're not really having one. Like, they're just not losing, ever.
So what was it really like when it came down to the crunch, you know, those last few weeks, months? Because both those seasons, as you say, were quite similar, that you were going for the title against a side that was relentlessly winning week on week.
Yeah. So the Sutton year, we were the team in front, weren't we? So they were trying to catch us. So the pressure was on us that year, and you could feel it. Like, you could feel it around the change room, around the stadium, like every game. We knew we had to win, and like I say, just because Sutton were winning every single week. And
does that creep into the performance at all when you're aware
of good. Our performance is no, like the beginning of that season we were playing total football, we were very good, and then towards the end of the season we were just grinding out results, but then there'll be a draw in there, and a draw weren't good enough because Sutton were picking up another, so they were getting another 3 points and closing the gap, and we're thinking, Jesus Christ, these ain't stopping. And then we played the Sutton away. I think it was like 4 games before the end of the season. And if they won that, they could win above us. I don't know if I was injured that game because I didn't play. And they ended up winning 2-0. And they were the better team by a mile. They comfortably won the game. And from then, we kind of realised that we probably weren't going to, because they were on such a good run. They were a good team that year. And we realised after that game it was going to be tough to catch them now, because then they were in front. Then obviously the year after, Maidenhead were the ones, were they in front of it? Maidenhead were top, weren't they? Mm. And we were catching them, so the roles were reversed. And we finished that season so strong, and we knew we had to play them the second to last game of the season, and we knew if as long as we're in touch and distance of them, like, we'll overtake them, because we think that they'll fall, because we remember from the year before. And then we went there and we beat them. I think was it 2-0?
2-1.
2-1, they scored late on, didn't they? And 2-1, and then we was on the even points, and we thought, right, got to take it to the last game of the season. And then we see that they're playing Margate. Margate were already down. Watty was the manager. I remember ringing Watty, he was like, Watty, please get a result. And he was like, Rancy, like, we're down now. I might have to rest a few players. I'm thinking, oh, bloody cheers, mate. They ended up, I felt like we played, we ended up winning, but they won on goal difference in the end, and deservedly so. They finished on whatever points, we finished on the same points, but they deserve it just as much as we would have if we won it.
And the moral of the story that began to emerge was that Ebbsfleet never do things the easy way.
Ever.
And we had these big, big moments in your career. You know, you've been involved in more playoffs than most players, looking at your kind of career history. But the Maidstone final, first of all, you'd sat out the Dover one a couple of years before that.
Yeah.
Memories of the Maidstone game?
Unbelievable until the last minute of the second half of the playoff, of the extra time. That was probably up there one of the worst days of football that I've been involved in. Because again, we were so good that year. And I don't want to say we deserved to go up that year, because whoever went up to deserve it. So we went into that game, and we weren't going into, I wouldn't say we were nervous at all going into the Maidstone game. We were actually confident, but I knew they were confident as well because they had gone on a stupid run to get into the playoffs, and everything that was happening, it was like they were just getting momentum, and I just felt like they had a bit of momentum going into the game. But we played the game, and we actually played really well. It was a bit of a nothing game, but I do feel like we were on top, and then obviously we got the penalty, Ked scored it, and then they scored straight after half time. Yeah, and then obviously it went to extra time, and then we scored the pen, and I felt, and then we had the ball in their corner, and it was not even a minute, I'd say 30 seconds to go, and I remember looking at the clock, asking the ref went 30 seconds, and I thought, well, it's done. So I can't remember who had the ball in the corner, I'm screaming, keep it in the corner, and I think they ran to go into the corner, but gave the ball away. They've given it away, and it's been switched. And then I remember just running back thinking, no, don't you dare. And they've crossed it, and one of our players gone to head the ball, but he's completely missed it. And it was an easier header, just a header away. And so he's missed the header. Then they've had there's just loads of clear. We're trying to clear it. Everyone was just nervous. I was just swiping at it. We had so many chances to clear the ball, and obviously it's fallen to whoever scored the goal in the end. And there probably was only one place that ball could have gone, because if you've seen it back, I've never seen it back, I've never watched that game back. But I see the goal, and there's one player, the four players are jumping in front of it, and it's the only place it could have gone. And then obviously it went 2-2. But by that time, we thought we'd lost the game. Well, the mentality is, we're done. But reality is, if we just pick each other up, then there was still penalties. But going into penalties, everyone's head was completely not there. And
that's so interesting, because we had Lee Worgan on recently, and he basically corroborated what you're saying, that when the goal went in for them, they felt like we've won this, there's no way that Ebbsfleet can pick themselves back up, and that was the feeling.
It was hard, it was tough. I remember we all had a huddle, and the manager does the best he can to try and pick everyone up, but you're looking around and you can kind of tell that everyone's not really there. And maybe looking back at it now, we probably should have done more to try and get some enthusiasm back into the group. But for being so close from the season and then the playoffs, and obviously being mates, and I'm from Mason, I knew half their team, knew people that were there. Yeah, it wasn't my best day. And then,
there's a picture of you on the pitch,
looking happy,
kind of being consoled, I think, by one of the Maidstone players. At that point, what goes through your head?
A waste of hard work. Like, we had worked so hard to get to that point, and it is kind of for nothing, really. Just overriding, just being absolutely gutted. I remember just being absolutely gutted that day, because we had a hangover from the season after. We started so slow, and it honestly took a whole summer. Still, probably didn't recover from it. That was probably the worst day I've experienced in football.
So, fast forward 12 months and you find yourselves back in the playoff final. Maidenhead have won the title and you're up against Chelmsford, and I mean, it was starting to go wrong, let's be honest.
Cookie
gets it himself.
Cookie decides
off.
To two-foot someone on the halfway line at 44 minutes. As soon as he done it, you look at him and you're like, what are you doing? So he's done it. Cookie, like, you love him, but you just think, you absolutely, like, what? Like, it's just stupid. And obviously he's seen the red card, and he's been sent off, and then we go in at half time. But that's the one game I remember going at half time, we were 10 men. And normally people going in, memories of the year before, thinking, oh God, this is going to be tough. But I never forget, when we were in that change room, not one person felt like we weren't going to win that game. It was still so positive. Everyone was like, right, we'll still beat these with 10 men. And it wasn't false. Like, sometimes people say it, but they don't really believe it. But I can remember everyone, the feeling of, yeah, we'll be like, we'll still win this game. And obviously we went out and then we went 1-0 down. Then I was thinking, oh God, here we go again. I don't think I could have taken another loss in a playoff final. But then obviously we recovered from it.
You came off, didn't you? I think McQueen came on for you.
Yeah, best tactical move Darryl's ever made. take the boring centre, holding centre mid off, and put some exciting players on. I remember Dero that day was probably the best game he's ever had in his career. It was unbelievable that day.
So then the kind of, you're in the centre circle, same ground where you've been so desperately dejected the year before, and this time it's gone your way. You turn the game around and you get your hands on the trophy, and it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I'd say deserved eventually. Like, we've finished so high, like so many points the years before. I don't think anyone could have said, yeah, they don't deserve to have been promoted eventually. At the time, you probably don't appreciate those moments. I look at it now and I just think, at the time, you just, I don't think it was expected to be in season. We expected to go up. And at the time, I probably didn't enjoy it as much as probably I should have, because you just think, oh, another one will come eventually. And they're few and far between. But yeah, that was one of the better moments at the Stonebridge Road.
I think one of my standout memories of you isn't actually playing, it's interviewing you after one of the playoff semi-finals away at Hampton.
Yeah.
You know, big gash on your leg,
blood
pouring down, and you'd kind of thrown yourself into all sorts of challenges and not sure how you picked yourself up to play the next game. But what was it that made you, and continues to make you, want to launch yourself into those challenges, even if you know there's a chance I'm going to come off second best?
Because if you don't, you probably will come off second best. But also, just I just love winning. I hate losing. I'm probably one of the worst losers. You'll see me in training, people will tell you I can be a moody, I can be moany, but the bottom line is it's just because I just want to win. And like most players, I like the intensity, and I'll never ask from other players what I wouldn't expect from myself. So I wouldn't ever say something to someone or moan at someone if I wasn't willing to do it myself. So I feel like if I'm going to do it, then you should be doing it. And yeah, I'm just desperate to win games of football. So yeah, I'll do anything I can.
I think you often, more often than not, played when you weren't fully fit or you had a niggle or something that wasn't quite right. That group that got promotion rolled into the National League the next season. You made the playoffs again. By the time you got to Aldershot for the eliminator, physically you probably weren't in great shape, were you? But you dragged yourself through it.
Yeah, because people forget that the month before that we had played, I can't remember the games we played, but they were all away, and they weren't like Bromley's. They were like Gateshead and Barrow. They were miles away, and we went through all of that, and then we obviously got in the playoffs, played Aldershot, went to extra time, and I had a hernia at the time. I obviously didn't know it was a hernia. I just was struggling. And I'll never forget, we beat Aldershot, and then it was the Wednesday night, wasn't it? So we played the Wednesday night. Then we had Thursday off, and then we travelled up to Tranmere on the Friday. And I remember just watching, there was three or four of us. In my head, I can remember me and Jukesy literally like limping onto this bus thinking, how are we going to play tomorrow? It was a 12 o'clock kickoff as well. So we've got to the hotel, and 11:30 at night, they've got four beds out in the hotel room. And we've got physios in, and they're just giving us rubs at 11:30 at night. So we should be asleep, but we're just getting rubs, just trying to get in. We're doing the ice chamber, we're doing everything just to try and feel normal. And I remember getting out to that game and just thinking, oh, I've got absolutely nothing in me. Like, Duke's out front of his groin or something like that. He probably, like, in hindsight, we shouldn't have played. But there was no one else to play, so we had to. And we weren't far off, to be honest. But yeah, that one to extra time, it was just too far. But I honestly think if we won that game, if we had a couple of more days off, we would have done, probably could have held out. And to be fair, a lot of their goals were good goals. And then I think if we went into Bournemouth the week after, I think we would have gone up that year.
We shouldn't gloss over the Aldershot game, really, given the decisive moment that night and how you kind of came back from the death three or four times. That was an extraordinary game.
Yeah, it was a good game. I remember the atmosphere was really, it was Wednesday night, the atmosphere, it's always good down there, to be fair. But they'd scored, and we was late, was it extra time? They scored an extra time, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then it was like last minute extra time for us. And I remember I got the ball in just the corner, and I didn't have any injury, I just smashed it into the box and just hoped, basically. And there was a big Dave Winfield, his big head on the end of it. And then, 1-1, and that was towards the end of extra time and went into penalties.
Could you quite believe that goal had gone in and actually the season's still alive?
Yeah, with that group I could, yeah. We had so much. A lot of times that year we went behind and ended up winning games of football. Like I say, you talk about men and characters, and that's one change room that was full of men and a lot of character. That doesn't surprise me at all that we come back and won that game in the end.
So, penalties again. You were a fair way down the list, weren't you?
Well, so. I wasn't on the list. So, I wouldn't say I'm a penalty taker. I don't want to take penalties. And I used to. And then, I'll just leave it to the ones that are probably better at penalties. And, we have five penalty takers that all, yeah, it was five penalty takers. They all scored. And it then went down to sudden death. And no one knew who the next penalty taker was. And I was either Clarkey or Dave Winfield, one of the two. I can't remember which one it was. And there were, I remember it was all in line going, well, who's taking next? And no one's really saying anything.
So it wasn't predetermined.
No, no one knew.
The sixth or the seventh.
No one had a clue. And no one said anything. And it must have been Dave. It could have been Clarkey, though. But one of the two, this shows what they're like. They were like, I'll take it. Like, if none of you want to take it, like, I'll step up. And straight away, I was remembering my head thinking, there's no chance I can let them take it in front of me. There's no chance. So I remember going, no, like, I'll take it in front of you. And he went, you sure? I went, yeah. He didn't really argue about it. So I don't think he wanted to take it. So where I had no time to think about it, I didn't get nervous. I literally wasn't nervous at all. I remember just picking the ball up, thinking, right, I've got no time to think about what I was doing. So I just picked up the ball, walked to it, and I knew where I was going. And I also knew that if I missed, they had already missed, hadn't they? So if I missed, it just went round again. So there was not really that much pressure, to be honest, on it. A lot of people said, like, how did you handle it? But I didn't feel any pressure at that time. So I just picked my spot and, obviously scored. But I only realised now at this time, now I'm at Aldershot, that their penalty taker that was supposed to take the penalty was in the toilet. So who's supposedly their best penalty taker as well, was on the toilet, and that's why their goalie had to take a penalty, and their goalie missed, and he went into where they got in the changing room, and like he come out at the end of the penalty, and like, oh, what's happened? He was like, let's finish, we lost. And he was like, oh, I was on the toilet, I thought I was going to get back in time. I don't know what player it was, but yeah, they only told about that when I went there now. It was like fuming with him.
Well, that is definitely news to me.
I don't think anyone knows that until I went in their changing room.
You talked about that group, the character of obviously winning a player final when you're up against it and then coming back against Aldershot and being prepared to put yourself through another sort of couple of hours up at Tranmere when you probably shouldn't have played. Where did that come from? You know, how was that spirit built to that point?
Years of playing together. Everyone, I want to say mates, but we wasn't mates. We definitely weren't mates. We were close, and we were a group, and we were a team, and it just got built over years from just pure respect for each other, and everyone was in it for the same thing, and no matter what was said, it was never ever personal. So, me and Keds back, everyone always reminds of the story when we played Oxford City in the trophy, and he gave a penalty away last minute. He said he didn't pull him. But so they've given the penalty, they've scored, and we've lost the game. I never forget the time. So I've gone into the changing room, and he was sat there. And I was the first one in the changing room, and I just walked past and gone, "You've absolutely killed us here." As soon as I've said that, Keds has got up and he's, "You what?" So he's come running over to me, grabbing. So me and Keds are like, I'm like grabbing Keds. Keds is big. I'm thinking, I've got no chance here. I'm thinking, please, someone walk through this changing room. So me and Keds are having this row in the middle of the changing room. Thank God everyone starts coming in, like breaking it up, and things are said, blah, blah, blah. And now everyone's in change, and I'm giving the big one. So I'm thinking, no, you've killed us. He's getting angry again. And anyway, it's all finished. We've lost the game. And this just sums our squad up. So we've had that. And there was loads of times like that happens. I'm on the bus, sat on the bus. And I remember Keds just coming on. We had a Christmas night out that night. Keds has come on, sat next to me, put a beer down. Not even mentioned it, and we just like nothing had happened because it was never ever personal, and that was the thing. No matter what was said, it was all for what people felt at that time, and it was just for the good of the team. And I think over the years, you kind of learn your characters. You learn, obviously, there's some players. I remember Sean Shields when he first came. Oh my God, he was, I want to say prima donna. He was just a bit like milky, and he was young, and he. Pretty boy, looked nice little tricks. Anyone touched him, he'd roll over. Bit of a baby, be a bit stroppy in training. But before you know it, people said things to him, and he could have gone one way or the other. He could have not listened, and carried on doing what he was doing and probably fallen out of the game and gone down the leagues in a couple of years. Or he could have done what he's done, took it on the chin, grew up, manned up, and just grew up as a man and become, and now as you see him, he's one of the best players in the league. And I feel that's what that change room would do to you. And you either sink or swim in it. And if you do take it well, you're gonna progress and you're gonna get better as a person and as a player. And and it was a strong group for that.
That togetherness that you had as a squad, how much was that tested last season?
Cool. Every day. You only have to look at the results that we got, and I think with a different group it could have been a lot different. And the fact that we still went in enjoying who we were with says a lot, I think, because that's where fractions could appear when things aren't going well outside of football and money's involved. You could see like fractions in the group, you could see little arguments, but I can't not at one point did anyone turn on anyone. Whether someone wanted to do one thing, someone wanted to do another thing, it was always talked about and it was always done for the good of the group. It was never, no one selfishly, individually went off and gone, but I want to do this. Like, Dave took a lot of the flack. So Winfield, obviously he was our captain, so he was the spokesman. So I felt a bit sorry for him because we was all agreeing as a group. He would then pass the message on and it was like shoot the messenger. So he was probably getting a lot of rubbish for it. But the truth is, it was a group thing. It wasn't one person ever. It was always, if one person. So I remember we played Salford. We hadn't been paid, and people were debating whether to go up there and travel. They didn't have the money. They wanted to get a job on the Saturday and earn some money to pay for mortgages, blah, blah, all of that stuff. And near on everyone was like, okay, yeah, if we don't get paid, we won't play. And Ashmore said, I want to play. And everyone's like, really? It was like, yeah, I want to play. Like, I want to go up there. I want to have a good showing and I like showcase myself. And I just want to play football. And I want to play against Salford. And some teams would go, yeah, but you're the only one, so you just have to do what we do. And because he wanted to play, everyone, okay, we'll play. So whether someone wanted to or not, it was all done for the good of the squad. And that just shows out what a good group it was.
You mentioned right at the top of the podcast when we were talking about going to Aldershot and that feeling of becoming a little bit stale at Ebbsfleet. Do you just know, you know, maybe I've had my time here and it is best to move on?
Yeah, I feel the year when we lost to Tranmere in the playoffs, because the money issues were starting to creep in then. And I remember finishing that season thinking, are we going to get much closer? Is this going to go on for another year? And in hindsight, I probably should have probably moved on that year. But there was still that, if we sort it out with this squad, I generally think we could go up. And I still believe now, if we had that squad without all the problems, this season especially, we would be well on our way to possibly winning the league. I honestly think that with the group we got. But it wasn't to be, but yeah.
Did you ever come close to leaving during your 6 years? You said there was options to go full-time.
Yeah, or? I had a few options to go into the league. Even when I was at Dover, I had a couple. But it was never... I never really felt like... Although it's in a league above, I never felt like I was going to progress with the teams that were coming in. I always felt like Ebbsfleet was a better club. Like, I honestly thought we was going to get promoted into the league, so I thought... Right, I can either go there now and maybe struggle in League Two, or go up with these and then kick on again. I honestly believe that we were going to kick on again, and I don't want to talk. I don't want to say it was down to money, but at the same time, the clubs that were coming in, they were offering you wages of like a 20-year-old, and it was kind of, this is an opportunity for you. And I'm thinking, yeah, but I'm 25, 26, 27 now. Like, you either know that I can do it, or you're going to have to, I've got bills to pay, I've got things to pay for, like, I can't afford to do that anymore. Like, if I was 20, then 100% yes. But I never felt like it was the right situation for me. And like I say, where I was enjoying it so much at Ebbsfleet, it would have had to be a big club for me to have wanted to move on. And like I said, I honestly believe that we were going to go up through with Ebbsfleet. And I wanted to, because... Where I'd been there for so long, I wanted to just keep progressing with that club.
The other thing that interested me was you said reflecting on your time at Gill's and how, well, you didn't really enjoy that environment of the first team because of your nervousness in training and that kind of thing. It was never a, you were sort of busting your gut to get back in the league because that was your experience. How do you feel now? Is the league somewhere you'd like to go back and play now?
I still think there's time for me to get into league. I feel like if I have my mindset that I do now and know what I know now, like everyone says it, if I knew what I knew now, I, in my opinion, would have made a lot. I would have made a career probably in the league. I still think there's time to do that. Probably had the opportunity, but this right now my situation probably doesn't allow me to do it. But I would love, I don't want to look back on my career and not think that I gave it a chance at any stage. And whether it's a year or however, the kids went into the league at 26, 27, then he had a good career, a good league career. So I don't see why not. I feel fit and I feel like I'm ready for that next challenge now. Obviously, I'm at Aldershot now and I feel no reason why we can't do that with Aldershot. But at the same time, I do want to give it a go and I don't want to look back on my career and think, is that a missed opportunity? Could I have done it? What is it like? Because there's so many questions and until you do it, you will never have the answers for it, I guess.
Fancy a few quick-fire questions to finish.
Yep.
Best goal you've ever scored?
I want to say Macclesfield on the telly, but there is a better one. Who did we play? Basingstoke. There's no video of it, so I just have to go by my word. But yeah, it was Basingstoke away. There's a picture of it, just me volleying it. It was miles out, probably one in a million. But yeah, it's my best goal.
You might have mentioned this person already, but the best player that you've played with?
Daryl and Jukebox.
What about coming up against tough characters in midfield? Who have you had the best battles with?
Atangana. He was at Havant. He's never really kicked on as much as I thought he would. I remember playing him and thinking, yeah, he's good. And there's another one the last couple of years. Right, he plays for Sutton. I've always thought he was, whenever I played against him, I don't know if he's just always had a really good game against me, but I always find him tough to play against. And there was one this year, plays for Halifax, played in the number 10. He's only young, I can't remember his name. But he's looked very good. He could be very good in the next couple of years.
It's been claimed that you've never done a pre-season in your career. How do you plead?
Not guilty. I've done one. I've done one this year. No, I've done. I've struggled with pre-season. Because the end of the season, I'm always injured. Or I'm carrying an injury. And we never get sorted over the season. So they're just kind of like, right, it will get better in time. And then I always go back to pre-season with the injury and it's still there. And then I end up having to have an operation or something. And end up missing the pre-season. Where we've been in Portugal, they're all running. I'm sat there by the pool and they're fuming. But yeah, no, I've done a couple. I've not done as many as I should. Probably two, yeah.
Who's made you laugh the most of your teammates?
You know what? I've played in some funny, funny squads. I honestly believe most of the squads I've played in have been, like, they shouldn't be as funny as they have. They've always made me laugh. So the Brownie group, the whole group was brilliant. Like, you'd go in every day and it would just be funny. And then it's just different characters, really. So we used to have our little morning group, like obviously with Jukesy, Keds, Payne used to be in it. I've been quite lucky, I think. I think I've played with some good, funny characters over my time.
Brilliant. Dean, absolute pleasure to spend the last hour or so dissecting your career, and we wish you all the best with Aldershot this season. And it's from me a big thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Steve. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.